welcome to the big show. This week, once again, you have to work with me, since Ewan is still out on family business. Yeah, we've had a little bit of a guest meltdown, but nonetheless, I'm very excited to have at least two reliable people on the show. No, the others had to drop out for good reasons, like being sick or having like family obligations. So,
or something really cool on TV. Who knows?
Who knows? No, it's fine. It happens every now and then. Anyways, as you can hear, we have Jeff once again.
And, you know, the way you started off the show, the sort of the sentiment of, well, you have to put up with me again, meaning you. Come on. It's like having the best special guest host ever.
Oh, that's... Thank you. I thought you would say it's kind of like having the best band ever together, which I think we are, right?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are nailing it.
Absolutely, we are. How's Bordo doing? Still,
I stepped outside between shows, mm-hmm. and it's hot.
It's hot.
but it's not humid, so at least there's that.
Mm-hmm. I thought you would say, I stepped outside and I got scared. I saw all those people. I'm like, what am I doing?
Well, I did step back inside pretty quickly. I mean, there were people out there, and that is disturbing.
Yeah, they scared you. Anyway.
Yeah, my favorite pub near me. Mm-hmm. Is open again, and I call it my local bike bar because mm-hmm. it's a bike shop, but at the front of it it has a full bar, and so in the before time I would go hang out there, and like on a Friday afternoon after finishing recording the big show, I would take my laptop and go over, sit at the bar and have a beer and work on stuff on my laptop. Mm-hmm. They reopened and I was so excited and I was ready to walk over and have a beer, and suddenly got so freaked out about the idea of being in a space that other people are in, mm-hmm. that I didn't go get my beer.
Yeah. I have kind of a similar story. Last weekend there was a like local meetup of like Democrats, like Americans, Democratic voters here in Linz, which is very rare. And I kind of wanted to go. Ned planned on going and got ready, and then I got freaked out and didn't leave. I was like, nope, I'm not doing this. Then stayed at home. And I was kind of sad about it, but also like, just couldn't get myself.
No, I totally get it. Now, I did have my beer at home, so at least there was that.
Yeah, I kind of did the same thing. I cooked at home, so it was fine. Anyway, yeah, and then the other part of the really awesome band is, and the person who brings all the stories usually, really cool stories as well, is Alistair. How are you doing, Mr. Dabs?
Well, I'm fine, thank you very much. It was funny when you said that we're having a guest meltdown. I thought that meant you were going to melt us down, sell us for scrap. I think that'd be worth less than we are at the moment. Weather is pretty good. I mean, it's warm, but it's not, you know, it's just, it's not that hot. It's around the low 30s. What's that in Fahrenheit? Low 90s.
There would be so, like, I mean,
it's kind of it's quite average and it's quite comfortable. But I know in Britain you had a bit of a heat wave and it's gone way over that and people are struggling. And now it's just all thunder and horrible.
So it's not now it's back out. To normal.
No. The only thing I have to worry about is chapped hands because we're all free to go anywhere at the moment. Everyone's going shopping. And of course, every time you go anywhere, you have to apply more gel.
Yeah.
So they apply it to every door. My hands are just, you know, just peeling everywhere. It's quite a trouble.
Sounds like a really horrible life in the southern part of France.
Oh, yeah, it's awful. Totally. I have to say this week, they finally opened up the Mediatheques. Mediatheques mm-hmm. is the same as a bibliothèque, so it's a library, except it's run by a private agency on behalf of the local council. It's a bit strange.
Mm-hmm. Strange,
Anyway, they finally reopened them this week. So I thought, right, I've got a free afternoon. I'm going to nip out and get some, you know, rent some DVDs for free rather than having to pay for them on Netflix or something. And of course, you know, they've got really old stuff that wouldn't normally go to the top of the list on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So my wife's going, "Ooh, have you seen this?" And it's like Soylent Green. And I said, you mean how many times have I seen it? Have you not seen it? No. Right. Okay. We'll get that. We'll get Soylent Green. We'll get this. We'll get that. And then all these films that they're charging for, even on streaming, such as, you know, the horror film Midsommar. Mm-hmm. It's all there, DVD free. Great. I love that. A big stack of DVDs came back. So, do you know, I was on the verge of crying off this evening so I could watch something. But no, I'll save that for later.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of similar here. Stuff is slowly opening up, and it's like there's still some businesses that are closed, but it's getting like it's basically anything entertainment is kind of still closed. Or I think the movie theaters are even opening even open already, but they're not showing anything. Like it's kind of, I mean, I checked because I wanted to go, maybe. I actually wanted to organize something with my team, and I was like, yeah, I mean, there's nothing showing.
I mean, they over like... here, all the art cinemas are open because the distancing's not a problem for them because they're usually half empty anyway.
So, so true.
There's loads of empty seats between everyone. So they're just open straight up, and they're showing, you know, old classics and, you know, yeah, it's... Mind you, I'm not brave enough to go myself, but maybe I will. Mm. I don't really want to sit through a film wearing a mask. I'm not sure I could take that.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the thing. I mean, here you would not be required to wear a mask, but you might still
here
want
we
to.
Are. Yeah.
You might still want to. That's a difference. Like, I mean, would you like take the risk? I don't think so. So yeah, no. That's a little bit of an issue. And then, I mean, the other thing is, that's something I thought about actually yesterday. I'm running out of stuff to watch. I mean, there's enough content out there, like on Netflix or whatever, but like, I mean, there's nothing new coming out, and like quite a bit of the old stuff I've watched, like, I don't know, 20 times or something. So it's getting more difficult to find content, really.
I don't know, there's loads of stuff, but none of it's free.
Well, yeah.
All the interesting stuff I have to pay extra for.
That's true. Yeah, anyway, we're not going to do the usual thing where we post links in the, like, post the news articles in the chat since we're only three people. since I know that you have quite a bit of content prepared, as always, which is awesome. Alistair, maybe you can start us off with one of your stories.
Well, I'm gonna rattle through just a couple of stories that I'm not going to feature.
Okay.
I will just post these in. I'll just mention them anyway. Mm-hmm. The opening acts. Yeah. The link that we were talking about before the show began was just a fun little story I saw this week, which just said activist hackers in the States released 24 years worth of data from hundreds of police forces in a move to coincide with protests against police brutality. So I just love this idea. Normally when you talk about a hack, you talk about so many million names or so many million IDs. I've never had it talked about in terms of years of data before. I like that 24 year. How old were you when they started recording the data that's now been made available? And then they say it's 270 gigs of data, which somehow doesn't sound very much, but there you go.
Yeah,
I suppose
it's probably just zipped all text. Mm-hmm. And zipped.
Yeah, text.
Yeah, so it's zipped and it's 24 gigs. Yeah, okay, fair enough. But anyway, there's not much detail in that story, so I was going to leave it. The other story that piqued my interest, though it's not much of a big story, let me just shorten that URL that I'm posting in here, was about NVIDIA supposedly deciding to build its own in-house GPU supercomputer. And of course, the link that I've given has a nice picture of what looks like a supercomputer, like lots and, you know, like something out of $1 billion brain or something. And I think, oh, you know, why? Well, because they can, because it's NVIDIA and it's good PR. And I'm thinking, you know, so they've got all this in-house stuff they can get going to put supercomputer together for no real reason, but they can't get, you know, two interns to write a new driver for my GeForce GT650M in my MacBook.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating.
It is.
But at least now we know why they can't make the time to write that driver for you.
That's true.
Yeah. This other story, let me get out of the way, which I used to write a lot about fintech until I found I was writing the same story over and over again. There's a story saying the German financial regulator expressed shock at, anyway, there's this organization, a company called Wirecard, which mm-hmm. is one of the many companies that handle transactions on behalf of people like, the credit card companies. Mm-hmm. And they seem to have, when they were doing an audit or something, they went, hang on, there's a hole here of about 1.9 billion euros.
Ooh.
And trying to find out, you know, where that's gone. And it's not like someone's nicked it or embezzled it. They say, well, we don't think we ever had it.
this is a little bit more than a rounding error.
It's not even accusing them of bigging up themselves, not like, you know, some sort of Ponzi scheme of money that never existed. They're not even saying that, just saying, well, we're not quite sure. You know, maybe promises were made and no one checked that they were real. And usually I spend all my time slagging off Bitcoin because I think Bitcoin is stupid. I mean, it is the real moron's idea of money. But I'm a big fan of blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if ever there was a good sales pitch for a blockchain-based currency, this story is it. Because
yes.
You couldn't have a financial hole of 1.9 million not know where it came from or where it went.
Yep.
You might not know who's got it, but it would be there. There'd be a record of it existing. And it would be traceable in the sense of, you know, who had it when. You just don't know who that person was. It's mm-hmm. just from wallet to wallet. And I just thought this would have been a great story if I was still writing about that kind of stuff.
That's kind of
and
crazy.
Say, oh, you know, problem with fiat currency again, you know, this. But I said so many bad things about Bitcoin, no one lets me write about it anymore. Because it's just, you know, no one with a brain would use it as a currency. Bitcoin's not a currency. It's an investment. It's a commodity to be bought and sold. It's not to be spent. Anyway, but the story of the week, sorry about all that. My story of the week, I read over while I was having my early dinner this evening. I'll just pop it in. It was in The Guardian. And it was, the headline piqued my interest, which is a quote saying, "We've bought the wrong satellites."
What?
Anyway, don't care about whether you're for or against Brexit or why you might have voted for and against Brexit, but Brexit does require Britain to take more personal responsibility of certain things, including technology, unless it builds bridges and makes deals. One of the things they thought they would do was have our own satellite navigation system. So, you know. British world leading, you know.
Okay, so
you might think it's a good idea. You might think it's a bad idea, but because a good idea and bad ideas, there's a fine line, but choosing the wrong company to do it, if you're going to bring in lots of, you know, commercial people can be a big problem. And I think this story kind of says, oh, you know, let's, you know, the company that they chose called OneWeb, you know, bless them, they had a good PR, probably had a really good flip chart presentation to someone in Parliament. And they said, you know, we're going to go down the route that Elon Musk is doing,
mm-hmm.
which sounds great until you realize, well, what Elon Musk wants to do is a long-term project that may not be finished until long after he's dead.
Yep.
Whereas Brexit is supposed to take place at the end of this year. But by then,
well, Britain Elon's already said, thing is more about data transfer and not about location services.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, anyway, so basically Britain said, okay, so part of leaving EU will also sever certain lots of European contracts that are very expensive, including the Galileo project.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, right, we're not going to be part of that. We want to do something different. And You can argue that was a really good idea. You could argue, oh, that was a terrible idea. But if you're going to do it, you don't then give the contract to a company that just does a good presentation and has also just filed for bankruptcy in the US, which they could do in March.
Yes, okay. I really like what it says in the article, that they don't even make the right type of satellite. That kind of makes me wonder what type of satellite do they make? Like, do they make, I don't know, spy satellites?
You know, big balloon.
Oh, yeah, could be.
Yeah, it's that satellite.
maybe. Or, I don't know, they make, like, space telescopes or something like that.
I don't know, but it was just, I enjoyed the story because it was like, you know, the wrong type of satellites.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you see, it's a joke in Britain about, you know, when the trains don't work and they say, because it's leaves on the line, leaves have fallen off the trees on the line. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, why would that interfere with the trains? You just brush them off the line. And they go, no, it's the wrong type of leaves, you know, because you know, and it's a perfectly good answer because certain types of leaves are getting very greasy. Some just slip off. Some, you know, so it's the wrong kind of rain. It's the wrong kind of snow. I've heard that one as well. Snow's fallen on the track, and it's not the wrong kind of snow. You know, not the snow that's made out of cold water. It's the snow that's made out of, I don't know, British satellite dust or something. So it's the kind of thing. The Britain's got the wrong type of satellites and snow and leaves.
And the wrong
anyway,
kind of
we've got excuses.
it's still funny. I mean, it sounds like a typical government thing. I think this could happen anywhere. It probably has happened in other countries. I mean, wouldn't be the first time. I know.
Yeah,
of,
but the timing in the UK is just perfect.
That's the thing. I mean, I know of bridges that were built in Germany that like lead to nowhere, can't be used, cost a lot of money.
Like, oh, that happens in Sicily, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, so yeah.
The problem here, though, is it's kind of a breaking story. So, well, breaking story. I mean, it's kind of a feature story, but there's no response here from anyone at OneWeb. Mm-hmm. And I would really like to hear their side of it.
Yeah, or the government side.
OneWeb is doing what Elon Musk is doing. They're internet satellites.
Mm-hmm. Huh. I don't think they're going to be ready by December the 31st, anyway.
Nope, and they certainly aren't going to help with GPS.
No.
That's funny. Yeah, the fundamental.
We'll go back. We'll go back to the old idea of having beacons by the side of the road. That was.
That's a good idea.
Well, it was still being mooted even, 10, 15 years ago as a way of having autonomous cars of, don't worry about GPS. You know, GPS is rubbish. Half the time it thinks you're on the street parallel to the one you're actually on. But if you had beacons, you know, you would take you down all the...
smart streets. So
is this a UK or an EU thing? Because beacons on the road, this is new to me.
All right. No, I think it was a British thing. It was one of the many things that was mooted for... Because when they started, I mean, there are some very limited autonomous bus routes, you know, linking train stations to an airport, you know, scattered around Britain. And they are driverless, but they're kind of... No one else uses the little bits of road that they use. Mm. And it doesn't use GPS and it doesn't use metal track. It's... They have little beacons along the way, so it just knows exactly where it is, where it's going. And I think, oh, yeah, we could have those down motorways and major roads. And, you know, there's a lot of sense to it, but I can't imagine it easy to do and it's expensive.
People here would go and take those and reposition them.
Yes.
Well, we have all these
take
cars
them to another city.
Yeah.
Yeah, next thing you'd be suggesting speed cameras might get interfered with. Perish the thought.
Yeah. Like that would ever happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard similar things about like smart streets, stuff like that.
Yes, or that's like, it. Yeah, that's it.
Same idea, basically. Yeah. It's so funny. Yeah, I mean, you kind of wonder how that meeting with the government went. Like, I mean, how did that happen? Like, someone from OneWeb came in to pitch their satellite idea, and was like, hey, we're going to bring broadband to everybody. And whoever they were talking to was the wrong person. Was like, hey, we can build a GPS system out of this. We need one.
Well, I mean, I wonder if this has got absolutely nothing to do with the current government, because, you know, or the current, you know, political persuasion of the current government, because, you know, previous governments of different types have also made daft decisions when it comes to, you know, choosing IT solutions for stuff. And, you know, one of, you know, Britain's biggest ever financial disasters was the one they tried to set up for the health service. And that was under a completely different government. It cost billions, just flushed down the drain. You know, they actually had nothing to show for it at the end. And it's as if they get very, very good advice, and they have lots of government committees, and they all meet and they do the right reports. But then same with other governments. I think then someone just goes, a lobbyist says, oh, I've got a mate of a mate, and, you know, can you do a flip chart presentation that we're going to have our own satellites, and they're smaller and cheaper, and they're British, you know, and they've got flags on them. And they go, oh, go on then. Oh, that looks really nice. Much better than that really expensive infrastructure crap I keep being told about. Let's have this thing that, you know, we can launch satellites into space with, you know, big rubber band. I don't know. It just, there's a kind of a division between, you know, you can make decisions based on the advice you're given. And if you just subvert that, and then, you know, unless you've got a lot of very clever, not clever, you know, people within the industry who understand all this stuff, or even some of it, to kind of go, hang on, that's just won't work.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure OneWeb didn't care. Like, they took the money.
Well, sure. I mean, I think maybe OneWeb could make it work, but I don't think the timescales that probably the person that gave them the initial contract.
Yeah, that's
maybe they didn't think that through.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure. I mean, if they're building kind of satellite systems, they could probably build different ones eventually. I mean, just might take a little time. I think that's the problem.
I don't know. I'm always reminded. I mean, it's got nothing to do with this. I was reminded when I worked on one of the app launches for one of the daily newspapers in Britain, and this whole company was running Quark Express. Mm-hmm. Okay. So as the page layout and production system, you know, Quark publishing system. And they had been since the 90s, early 90s. And they decided, yeah, we're going to, you know, update everything. It's all going to be running Adobe InDesign. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, well, the training cost alone would be insane. You'd be much better just upgrading Quark Express. Why this sudden change? And apparently what they did was, you know, the executives sensibly said, right, let's call in all the players. Let's call in Adobe. Let's call in Quark and so on. And Adobe's third-party, you know, companies, it was Atex, kind of went in and they said, right, here's the product we're going to sell you. And they would demonstrate it. Mm-hmm. Apparently Quark went in with a flip chart and a PowerPoint presentation. Mm-hmm. And the executives said, well, we're not spending millions on a PowerPoint presentation. We want to see a product that works. And it was a sensible decision.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the opposite is happening. It's too many people are still getting bamboozled by promises of IT.
By flashy PowerPoint. But
the whole thing with the app as central to the track and trace for the current pandemic in different countries. I mean, you know, there are people out there who generally believe an app can do anything. It's just an app that's kind of, you enter data and it's sending it somewhere else. I mean, it's not even a clever app. It's just one tiny, tiny part of a complete system. But someone somewhere making a decision goes, yes, the app will do this. Mm-hmm. Could do nothing of the sort.
Exactly.
Absolutely nothing of the sort. All it is data gather based on trust. And it's not the app people's fault. It's, you know, crazy expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not going to cure cancer. Like, not anytime soon. All right. Jeff, what is your story today?
not nearly as exciting as realizing you don't have 1.9 billion euros that you thought you did. This is a change in policy for Microsoft. So what they're doing is now enforcing Windows 10 updates for business users. And apparently there were enough business users that kept doing the defer update installs that Microsoft has decided that's a problem. So they're not going to let them do that anymore. Now, of course, because they've put this policy in place where they're changing everything so that you can't not install the updates, they're also including a way so that you cannot install the updates.
Okay.
So the way it works is a big Windows 10 update comes out and you can defer it for 35 days. And then after that, it just has to install. Unless you go way deep in the settings for groups, business settings, something, and then you can set the setting back to what it was before so that you don't actually have to install the updates. Which to me seems counterproductive, because the reason Microsoft wants these updates to be installed is because they're fixing like big security issues. And anyhow, Microsoft is doing this, and I'm sure that there are all kinds of businesses out there that won't realize that there's still a hidden way to disable that, and feel that they have a justified reason for not installing updates because they finally have a system that's working and you don't touch it ever again once it starts working.
Yeah, I mean, I have a theory why Microsoft is doing this, and it's not because they're concerned about securities or like security, not in a sense that they really want the system to be secure. It's more that they don't want the negative, negative backlash if like a big security flaw comes out and it's exploited and people didn't patch their systems. They just don't want to deal with the backlash that causes, even though everybody like that should know any better knows that there was an update already out there, and if people installed it would all be fine. So I think it's just a marketing thing for them.
Probably. Yeah. I think it highlights a fundamental problem with Windows, which is that even though Windows 10 is so much better than earlier versions of Windows, Windows is still perceived as so fragile that you don't want to change anything when you have a system that's working, because you know as soon as you update something, it's all going to break.
Yep, it's going to break, it's going to change.
That's a big problem for Microsoft, because it doesn't matter if that's not true. Mm-hmm. The fact that that's how people perceive Windows, that's a big problem for the company.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a whole mindset thing as well. I mean, I even see that in my company in some places, the whole, if it's not broken, don't touch it or whatever, this whole mentality that if it's working, then don't change it. Not seeing that there's also opportunity in change, or that sometimes there's a good reason to change, like security updates.
A security update, to me, that says it's broken, you need to fix it.
Yes. But people don't see it that way. They see it, the machine, until actually there is malware on the system and it breaks the entire system, until that point, it looks to everybody like it's still working, so it's not broken, so why should I install an update that might potentially break it? So the same, it's an issue. And I mean, the setting is there because they still, it's a typical Microsoft thing. They don't want to make a decision. They want basically still, make everybody happy and have IT departments that otherwise would probably push back and say, we don't want that. Give them an opportunity to still have it their way. So I might not advertise it as widely, but it's still available if someone complains.
You know, I find that philosophy just so fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, Microsoft clearly has the majority of operating system installs on desktops and laptops.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Microsoft's in the position where they could tell users, whether that's individuals or companies, mm-hmm. look, this is what we're going to do, and you just have to suck it up and do it. But they won't do that. And then you have Apple on the other side, which on the desktop has a minority share.
Yeah, small minority.
And, mm-hmm. and they just straight up say, look, this is how it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't even apologize. It's just, this is what we're doing now. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people might complain about it, and some people might switch to another platform, but they just still do it.
And yet it isn't proving to be a problem for Apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. No, it's something I've watched in Microsoft. I think it also has something to do a little bit with the type of customer that they're serving. It's probably a little bit more risk averse. Well, it might depend on the business, but I would guess at least a little bit more. But it's
how does this affect a legal position? Because I know we all click at the, you know, scroll to the bottom and say, yeah, we agree to all this. But if they start saying, look, we're going to automatically change the software on your computer, whether you like it or not, and one of the updates starts disabling other stuff. I mean, where's the point where you said, yeah, that's fine if they're saying you don't have a choice?
Oh, it probably was in the terms of service. They probably just changed the terms of service, presented to the user. The user says, yeah, it's fine. Doesn't read it, clicks on it. It's in there.
So if you say, no, I don't want it, then you don't have to do the updates.
Then you never get updates again.
I don't know, it just sounds weird. Also, this thing about you can pause them for up to 35 days. Mm-hmm. Does that 35 days restart every 35 days, or can you pause it for 35 days and that...
You can pause it for 35 days.
You've already paused it and then start it again on day 34. And then pause it again the following day.
No, you can't.
Now, the way I understand it, they're not being that wishy-washy with it. So you start your 35-day pause, and then that's it. It's a 35-day pause. And
for that one update?
For that one update.
There's one every Monday morning, as far as I can see.
Well, but you have to install the previous one until, like...
Right. So the previous one, it'll go in. So mm-hmm. you could have multiple pauses stacked up, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
And as each pause expires, then whatever update you're trying to avoid gets installed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny with Windows. It always struck me, there's a Monday morning thing with Windows. Windows is always really, really slow Monday mornings.
Mm.
And I've got mine not to do automatic updates. But usually what happens at some point, I'll be going, this is driving me mad. What's happening? I'll have a look in window updates. And it goes, would you like to install the updates I've spent all morning downloading? And you go, yep. well, now I've got them, yes. or tonight or something. But the whole point of me not wanting to update first thing in the morning wasn't because I don't want to update. It's because I'm working in the morning, especially on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Monday morning seems like a really bad time decision on Microsoft's part for that.
Yeah, and I think that's the default. Yeah. Like you could change. I remember on Windows 10, you can change it to update or download at night.
Well, no, what it does is it downloads whenever it wants to, and then you can choose to run the update overnight. So it does the restart at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could also be.
It just seems to download it all on a Monday morning. I've no idea why.
It's like, oh, it's Monday. You've asked it not to. Yeah, I mean, it could be smart. Like, I mean. Given that we have machine learning in our phones these days, you would think that the system could figure out what the best time for you is to download it.
Which
is not on a Monday morning. You would think, yeah, but apparently...
Or maybe they were looking for, the shops are shut on Monday. No one will be using Windows.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, it's... I mean, it's difficult. I understand that you want to force people to update. On the other hand, I mean, most people do update if you bug them enough. I mean, I saw that with my mom. Like, my mom installs iOS updates without me even telling her to do it. Like, even the big updates. She just sees one and is like, oh, there's a new update, and installs it. Doesn't even think about it, doesn't ask, doesn't think about, like, will something break? She just sees a notification for an update and says, yes, let's do that. So, yeah, I mean, she hasn't been bitten so far. And maybe that's part of why she does it.
I do that especially with Apple and Adobe stuff. As soon as it's available, I update everything.
Yeah.
And of course, then all the horror stories come out saying, oh, this doesn't work, that doesn't work. And so I go around on social media saying, works here, fine. Whether it does or it doesn't, it just annoys me.
That's good. That's a good one. We have another Microsoft story, which is my story for today. Just came out today. Microsoft stores have been closed for a little while, just like basically everything else around the world, or some stuff reopened now. But, well, Microsoft stores are not going to reopen. Because Microsoft...
Ever.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say ever. Like, you never know. Microsoft might change their minds and introduce Microsoft stores in 5 years again. You never know. But at least not the ones that are open currently. They're going to close all stores in the world. It says New York City, London, Sydney, Redmond. Like, there will be a couple that will stick around. They will be turned into experience centers. I'm betting those are the really expensive locations where they have, like, whatever, 15-year leases and couldn't get out of it.
Yeah, and it's cheaper for them just to set up an experience.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it doesn't hurt to have something cool that you can still show off to shareholders. Like all those Microsoft stores that you might have seen in malls and whatever that barely anybody ever uses, they're staying closed. The employees, for the most part, will move from physical retail to support and online retail. Microsoft is apparently going to keep them around. I mean, the work doesn't go away just because you don't have stores.
I'm glad the employees aren't getting let go.
Yeah, I'm very happy about that too. But this is going to cost Microsoft quite a bit of money. They're like going to pay, they already paid for it, but they have to like defer something. I'm not a financial guy, but I read something about $450 million that they have to basically put on the books as basically a loss. They probably have to pay for leases and I mean, like, equipment and whatever they had that they don't need anymore. They will close. Microsoft is saying they're just moving everything to online because that's the thing to do for them.
You know, I didn't even know that there was a store in London, but that it only opened a year ago, just before I left the country. So
usually they were very close to flagship Apple stores. So probably Covent Garden would be.
Oh yes, I think you're right, because I remember walking through Covent Garden. When I was in London.
Sorry, no, it's not. It's Regent Street.
Oxford, so
the same as Apple.
Yeah.
Wait. Okay. Which is the Apple store that was remodeled and recently reopened? Was that Regent Street?
That was Regent Street. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking of, because I remember walking past the Apple store and thinking, here I am in London. Mm-hmm. Here's the one Apple store I'm going to be near. And it's closed for remodeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there is another one in Covent Garden.
And I remember seeing a Microsoft logo nearby and thinking, oh, well, of course there's a Microsoft store nearby. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, Apple's got one on Regent Street and Covent Garden.
Yeah, I've been to all Apple stores in London, so I've seen them all multiple times.
They're quite good, aren't they?
There are a couple, like the one in, what's it called, the White City, Whitehall? Can't remember. the mall.
Oh, yeah, the shopping center.
That one is boring. It's a mall.
Except their choice of music was quite good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
I did go there, God, years ago, when the iPad Mini first came out. I thought, right, I'm in London, I'm working, I'm going to go out and buy one.
Yeah.
And that was the nearest one. Oh, what's it called? White.
I think it's White City.
Was it Whitfield or something? I can't remember.
Oh, it could also be Whitfield.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds I can't like remember. It was,
people are probably screaming at their podcast players now. Saying, ah.
It was a bit of a walk, and I went there, and there was just loads and loads of people, and it was very small, and it's just a small shop in a shopping centre. And I thought, oh, I'm not going to hang around. And someone kind of said, look, we're busy. Do you want to hang around? We'll be with you. And I thought, it depends if the music's any good. And at that precise moment, they started playing Led Zeppelin. And I thought, do you know, I'll hang on for the next, 10-minute drum solo. And by then I was served. So, you know, good on them for choosing good music.
Yeah, it is White City.
In
Westfield. Oh, Westfield. Westfield. That's the one.
Yes. Something like, that's the one.
The Apple Store is called White City. It's Westfield, yeah.
Yeah, I was in Kensington at the time, and it took me about half an hour to walk there.
Yeah, as I said, I've been to at least the ones that are in the London area, all of them. And all, three in Birmingham, even though there are only two, because they opened one and closed another one. So, yeah, anyway, I've never understood Microsoft here because, like, they try to replicate something, they try to copy something without really, I think, understanding what made Apple stores unique.
And hardware.
No, I don't think it was even just the hardware. It was the whole experience, like the architecture, like everything coming together, really. The hardware is interesting, too. I wouldn't say Microsoft doesn't have any interesting hardware. It's definitely not a company that is known for hardware, which is probably part of the problem, but they had, the Surface line seems, if you're in the market for that, seems to be reasonably well-liked. The Xbox definitely is. I think the only people I ever saw in the Microsoft stores were actually looking at Xboxes. it's probably the only thing that drew people there. There was no reason to go there, literally.
Yes. You nailed it. There was never a reason to go to a Microsoft store, but Apple created this whole environment and of course Apple products are more exclusive. Mm-hmm. So, it was, I think, much easier for Apple to create an environment that could be successful with their stores.
Mm-hmm.
But with Microsoft, you can go to any electronics store and buy a Windows PC and Amazon, that's right there. There's so many options for buying PC or Windows-based products that... In many ways, it feels like buying a commodity as opposed to something special. Mm-hmm. And Apple has been able to get people to feel like when you're buying a Mac or an iPhone or an iPad, you're buying something special. And the Microsoft stores never created that same feeling. The Microsoft stores became the place where when you needed to go shopping at the mall, your kids would go hang out at the Microsoft store and play Xbox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
And there'd be more employees in the store than customers or Xbox players at any given time.
Yeah. The one time I went to a Microsoft store, I think that was very early when they launched them. The one that was in 2014. I remember that in San Diego. I walked in there and they were, I don't want to say almost rude, because they were trying to sell something. They wanted to push me to buy something immediately. And I didn't appreciate that. It might be coming from Apple. that I had different expectations. I don't know how that would be for someone who's more on the Windows, Microsoft side. But it just felt outlandish to me that, like, I just walked into the store, just wanted to see what they have, and they immediately pushed something on me. Like,
yes, I got the used car salesman feeling one time when I went in to a Microsoft store. And the other time that I went in, I was the only person in the store other than the employees.
Which also feels weird.
Yeah. And at no point did any employee acknowledge I was in the store. Or no one came up to me and said, hi, thanks for coming in, or can I help you find something? Nothing.
Yeah.
And eventually I left. And there's still no reaction from them.
Yeah. So as I said, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Something that I think Apple does very well is, I mean, you walk in a store, even if the store is busy, like, employees will walk up to you every now and then. Like, they will not bother you, but they will walk up to you and just start a conversation, like, about whatever, random things. Doesn't even have to be a product, but you just create a connection, and then eventually they will figure out, like, what you might be, like, they will ask what you might be looking for, or, like, whether you need any help or whatever. But, like, if they see that you're just not interested in a conversation, they'll just, like, be friendly but leave. But they will still be there for you, and I think that made a big difference. And I think Microsoft tried to copy something without understanding it and never got it right. It could have worked. I think the idea, like, it could have, but Apple showed that it can be done, and other companies as well. I mean, I know other stores that are really good, like Lego stores, for example.
Yes.
So it can work. It's not like, it's not a completely crazy idea, but you have to get it right. And I think Microsoft never got it right. And as you can see, all the money in the world cannot buy you a good store. And Microsoft,
it's interesting that you're talking about, it's the retail experience. When did Apple start their Apple stores? I mean, it's a lot, they've been running a lot longer than you think.
Early 2000s, I think.
Yeah, because I think I was still working on Mac User in the UK at that time. And when they said, oh, right, we're going to have these shops, and we just thought it'd be like, you know, a computer shop like Mac Warehouse or something like this. And we're going, oh, you know, all this stuff about, you know, not allowing online sales and hammering their, you know, gray imports and stuff. And now they're making it even harder for the Apple centers. And we had absolutely no idea that they were going to do what they did. You know, have these vast places with high ceilings that didn't look like a warehouse, looked more like a yoga studio. Have lots and lots of really nice looking products.
Or like an art gallery.
Okay,
in some places.
They're all tied down, but there was lots of space and you could actually have a feel, and there was absolutely no pressure. And, you know, it's a bit unfair. You know, some people have got the slight impression that occasionally I get a bit cynical about things. And I put off going to any Apple store for quite a long time until I did go, because I something had broke down. I absolutely had to get a replacement that moment. And I thought, I'll go into one. And the experience was just, you know, I mean, the shopping experience just gets worse and worse and worse everywhere. But it was just so great and comfortable. And as you say, there was no real pressure. They knew I'd either buy something or won't buy something. But if I'd actually walked through the door, I probably would buy something. And the longer I hang around, probably the more I'd spend. And I thought, you know, that was really easy. I had no idea actually what I was going to get, you know, precisely. And they really did seem, you know, again, people kind of go, oh, Apple store people, the geniuses, they're really thick. But actually their product knowledge was pretty good. I mean, very good. And I walked out, you know, with a product, whatever, it was a cable or something, I don't know. And I actually thought up an excuse to go back the next day just to buy an adapter for £18, just so I could be sure that was actually what happened. It was a nice shopping experience. And it's interesting seeing this with Microsoft, is it wasn't just one shop badly located or one shop that was bad, had staff who was badly trained. The whole thing, you know, multiple locations.
Yeah.
And that's not just a COVID thing. I think No. It just couldn't have been working well enough to start with.
Yeah, the story says it was actually planned for next year, so they were already kind of thinking about it, and COVID just like
it just accelerated that timetable.
Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, if you're already thinking about it, and like then this is probably the best time. Like you're already close. Yeah. Like it's just like everything's moved online anyway.
I mean, I think the example is like unless you're really up to date with all this stuff, you don't really know what you're going to get or what to ask for, let alone what it is you're actually looking for. Mm-hmm. And there's a series of shops in Britain called Richer Sounds, and it's for people who love buying audio equipment. Mm-hmm. But if you walk into a Richer Sounds and you say, I've no idea what I want, but I've heard of something called a sound bar, you know, what's one of those and how much does it cost and will it work with my telly? You know, they just laugh at you. I mean, they're nice. I mean, they're funny guys there. But, you know, you're not going to get, they'll just spout a load of bollocks. Or it's like going to a garage. You know, I think I might need a wheel. And they'll either laugh or rip you off or just say, look, come back when you know what you want. Whereas an Apple store, there is very much it's not patronizing at all. But you can walk in and go,
right,
I need a cable for a computer. And they go, what computer have you got? And you say, I don't know.
I'd actually
overheard a conversation, someone saying something like that. It says, well, it's that kind of pinky goldy type thing. And the Apple store guy said, I don't suppose you've got a photograph of it. And the guy said, oh yeah, I photographed it on my phone. Which it's this one. He goes, right, you need this cable. And picked it off. And I just thought, that's really
good.
Was smart, you know, these are well-trained people, and that's how you make a sale. You don't pressure people. You have what they want.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
So maybe,
That's
maybe that wasn't quite. It's difficult for a Microsoft staff to be expert on so many different companies' products.
Yeah, but I think
that is quite hard.
Yeah, I mean, definitely is. But from what I've heard and like the staff, like if you asked them and if like they were not selling you, if you had a genuine problem, they were well trained. Like they knew what they were doing and they could fix it. Like, so it wasn't that they didn't know anything. It's just like nobody ever used it because, well, I mean, I don't even know how many people even knew that they could go to a Microsoft store and like have something fixed.
Probably. Well, this is my point with the Apple store. I didn't need to go back.
Yeah.
And I know I can get the equipment cheaper elsewhere, but I just enjoyed going back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
and I'm not that well healed.
Yeah. I can tell you, I mean, in the days where, well, cell phone plans were super expensive and like roaming basically wasn't a thing, especially not in Europe, like roaming and like going to the UK and then like still using your cell phone plan, your data plan wasn't a thing. I would like be in London on vacation and I would go to an Apple store just for Wi-Fi. Which was super smart.
I have done that too.
Yeah, super smart. Like, and I said, that was like early, like 2010, 2011, maybe. Like, there still wasn't, like, that wasn't a thing yet where, like, Wi-Fi was everywhere. I think other than Starbucks and the Apple store, there was no Wi-Fi anywhere.
Yeah, I have done that very thing. I've gone into Apple store, they would say, can we help you with something? Mm-hmm. And I just was very open and said, mm-hmm. I'm in a bind and I need Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay.
Sure. Yeah, that's what it's for.
And then after about 10 minutes, an Apple employee walked by and set a water bottle in front of me.
Mm-hmm. It was super nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And as I said, I think that's the other part that Microsoft's missing. It's the experience part. Like you're not there to sell. You're not there because you want to buy something per se. I mean, that's the other part with Apple stores. Like, I go to Apple stores and I don't buy anything because I don't have to. But I just go there for the experience and for enjoying them and seeing them, like, and how different they are. I mean, I've been to the flagship store in San Francisco, the one with the first one they did with the trees and everything. And I went to that one just to see it. Which I mean, I'm an Apple girl, but like, it's still like, it's an interesting experience. And I said, like, none of the Microsoft stores looked anything interesting to me from the outside. Like, they didn't even look inviting. And I say that fully knowing that some Apple stores also don't look too inviting. Like they're, as I said, the mall type stores are usually not that interesting, especially the really small ones.
Sorry.
Do you remember when Sony had their stores?
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And they modeled them after the Apple stores. Mm-hmm. And they were awful. Mm-hmm. Absolutely awful. Like they were around for only a handful of years. Mm-hmm. And the last one that I remember seeing was at the Metreon in San Francisco, which mm-hmm. of course makes sense because Sony was the big sponsor of the Metreon. Yep. And so you'd think that store, because of its location and relation with the Metreon, that store would always be sharp. And I mean, it looked like it was 30 years old and had never been cleaned. All the displays were grungy, chipped and broken. Mm. And the employees looked more like they were zombies than people. Mm. And so anyhow, another example of a company trying to model the Apple store mm-hmm. and completely not getting it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it makes sense to copy something. I mean, it really doesn't make sense to copy something. You have to make it your own. And I don't think any of those companies really did. They didn't figure out what their specialty is, what their customer base also is. They just saw the success and said, well, we want that too, and just did it. Just throw money at it and do it. And as we're seeing, that doesn't work. Anyway, I think, except if Alistair, if you have another story, if not, we would go to
I've been trying to find out, I did have almost have a story that I knew was going to happen this week, which was... the good old company that is running Rubik's Cube now, mm-hmm. Since it got all the intellectual property sorted out, they do a lot of PR of events and stuff mm-hmm. around Europe especially. And this week they were planning to have try and do a Guinness Book of Records attempt to, hang on, what do they call it? It was... they wanted to get 20,000 people on a live stream to solve some Rubik cubes together. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it would have been an event, but it was going to take place last night. And for the life of me, I cannot find out, or I couldn't find out how they did. And even on the website, it's as if the event never happened, which isn't a good thing. You'd think it would be all in, on their blog. Anyway, I finally found their YouTube page, mm-hmm. which had the live stream on. And I don't know if this how it works this way, but it says this was viewed 18,714 times.
That's
so maybe they just didn't hit the 20,000 and they think we'd better just shut up about it. Or have I misunderstood how live streams are counted? Oh, well, no story there then. Brave attempt at PR, but no, didn't happen.
All right, then this podcast and all the other podcasts on the network are supported by TSO Host. They're a really great company. They offer us, for example, our servers. We have two really great servers, being rock solid since we got them. I don't even remember how long ago. It must have been like 2 or 3 years at least. Never had any issues. All the issues we've ever had, we caused ourselves, like this misconfiguration or messing something up or like touching something you shouldn't have, not knowing what you were doing, like all of that. That's all us. Never been an issue from TSO Host. They've been great to us. They offer really great domain name services. They have like web hosting. They have pre-built packages for WordPress, like if you need a WordPress website or a blog, like ours, for example. If you want to start a podcast, that would be something you could do. And then obviously they have servers. They have a really great support as well. You can call them. They're on social media as well. I've watched that a little bit. BTN listeners reaching out to them with questions, with issues, with like whatever, not knowing where to start. And they've been really great and helped them out. So they have really, really good support. And all they want for our like for us to like talk about them is to sponsor us basically, is that we like talk about them on social media, that we just tell them like just that they get brand recognition really. So if you're a listener, whether you need something from TSO Host or not, whether you're a customer of TSO Host or not, doesn't matter. Just head over to your social media of choice and talk about TSO Host and tell everybody how much you appreciate that they support BTN. That's all they want. And if you are in the market for something, if you need like website or whatever, there's an offer code BTN20 that gives you 20% off everything they offer. And the other sponsor, Callum is not here this week, but usually he's at least on a Mac show, usually on the big show, but tonight he got a night off, is iMend Max. They're a really, really great company that offers repairs and data recovery for Macs usually, so hence the name. They also do data recovery for PCs. So they said like as long as it has a hard drive, they will try to get the data off it. They offer refurbished Macs especially. They have right now, as far as I remember from the Mac show, a couple of iPad Pros as well, refurbished iPad Pros and MacBook Pros, yeah. And I think also a couple of iPhones currently. So like some really great options if you don't want to pay Apple's prices, but you still want to have one of the devices. And they will try to repair almost anything that they can. So even if it's not a Mac, doesn't matter. We talked about it on the big show a couple of times where they like offer to repair, I don't know, Chromebooks and other devices. As long as it is electronic somehow. I mean, my Beats headphones will eventually probably go to them to get them fixed, to exchange a couple of parts. Then yeah, they will do that too. Just reach out to them, imendmax.com, and or on Twitter I think they're also at imendmax, and they will give you a quote and tell you like what's doable, what's not, and they do some really crazy stuff. Like they fixed an iPhone the other week. That was, I don't even want to call it broken. It was beyond broken. It was like completely destroyed. Like run over by a truck or something. Barely even recognizable as a phone. It was one of those fancy new bent phones, like with like the spiderweb design. I don't know. But they completely fixed it up to like, you couldn't even like tell that it was repaired. Like it looked like new. Almost. Really, really great company, really great people. I always love having Callum with us, and head over to imendmax.com if you need anything. Time for the cool thing. Jeff, start us off.
Okay. Well, I don't think it's any secret that I am a fan of Wyze cameras, which is WYZE. And they have finally released, at least for pre-order, the camera that I've been hoping for a long time, which is their outdoor camera. And their cameras have been so popular that people have taken these cameras that are designed specifically for indoor use and adapted them to be able to use them outdoors. So finally now we have a proper outdoor camera. So their cameras tend to be priced very affordably. So like their basic camera is a $20 camera, but it's a lot more than a $20 camera. The outdoor camera, it's $49, and that includes a repeater that plugs into your network. And the camera itself is wireless, has a rechargeable battery. Depending on how often it's capturing video, the battery runs 3 to 6 months without recharging. And it has an SD card slot in it. But if you're worried someone will steal the camera and all your footage, there's an SD card slot in the repeater that plugs into your network. And since that's indoors, if the camera's stolen, you don't lose your footage on the SD card. And they do offer a subscription service for some online storage. But the way they've set up their whole system, you never, ever have to sign up for their subscription service. And anyhow, so I've got a couple other cameras set up already. And I was ready to buy another one. And I was going to like wrap tape around it and mount it outside. And then they said, well, hold off. We're going to be releasing this camera. So I held off, and now I have mine on order.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so extra cameras for this will cost, I think they're $30.
That's nothing for a camera.
But you can't buy the individual cameras yet. Because they have to get all of the starter kits out that have the camera and that repeater out.
Sounds pretty cool. Alistair, what's your cool thing?
So I'm looking at the cameras. Why do you like these cameras, Jeff? Do you live in a really rough area or something?
Yeah, I live in the middle of downtown Boulder, where I have to worry about mountain lions and bears attacking me.
Who's that knocking at the door? Check it. It's not a mountain lion or a bear.
Right.
The camera's not working. Camera's not working. It must be a bear.
It must be a bear. That's right.
Exactly.
Okay. I've got a few. Let me rattle through a few. I did have one proper one. I thought I'd throw this in before it's too late. I've just put a link in. Have I put a link in? Yeah. So if you're hearing this, the link is reopen.europa.eu. And then I suggest you put EN after the slash if you want to read it in English. The European Union is running a little website there that day by day, minute by minute, they update the travel regulations in all the countries as they currently stand due to the pandemic. So if you're looking to get out and about, go on holiday or for business within Europe, and you're not quite sure what the rules are to enter Bulgaria from Slovakia are, this will tell you. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of quite handy because it's true. You don't have to look it up on social media and guess. And it's official and it's free, obviously. And it's, as I say, it's updated every day throughout the day. So I thought that might be useful. So that's reopen.europa.eu. Right. So that was one. It's kind of not very cool, but useful. I was going to throw this one in because I saw it's a new product. I'll put another link in. The link I put in is eu.livescribe.com. So someone's launched another of these. There used to be a fashion for this, and they went away and they come back. It's a pen that can recognize what you're writing.
I didn't know LiveScribe was even still around.
Yeah, neither did I.
So, but it's a nice looking pen, and I just love the idea. The last time I remember this, it was like it was to save you the bother of having to scan in your handwriting and have it auto recognized. But the last time I looked at one of these products was like nearly 20 years ago. And since then, you know, this is a brilliant spy device. You know, someone you don't trust, next birthday, give them a live scribe. And then just don't tell them that it's a smart pen. Just tell them it's a pen. And they'll be using it, and you'll be able to see what they're writing at all times. You just get it sent to the data straight to you. Thought that might be quite fun to try out one day. Anyway, the other one I thought might be fun was this. I'll just put the link in, but I won't read it out. Basically, it's a manufacturer of vibrators. And they've found a way to, they've written a game on an app, and they've just released the app on Android as well as iOS. So basically, if something goes wrong in the game, it goes all the way up to 11. What can I say? But anyway, I'll leave that for you to find. If you want to know its name, it's called the company's Motor Bunny, and the app is called Fappy Bunny. You can look that up in either of those stores, App Store or Google Play Store, and then you'll see what I mean. I have not put the link in to the YouTube channel for obvious reasons. But the thing that I did like, let me get the British, the English language link in, is this. I went to IKEA today, or as we say, IKEA, because I can, and there was no one else going today, because since no one's been able to go, they were giving out 10 euro vouchers. And I thought, you know, I could spend 10 euros on something.
Yep.
On in IKEA. And I found this. It's called Grimar, G-R-I-M-A-R. And it's just a tablet stand. Okay. And it's made of bamboo, which I always think is a good thing. And the problem I've got with these little tablet stands and phone stands is they're all designed for normal tablets and normal phones. Mm-hmm. And generally, they're all quite good. But when you have an iPad Pro, it's just that bit big, too long, mm-hmm. and too heavy, and the center of gravity, it doesn't make it fall over straight away, but you, the slightest push or nudge on your table can be enough to tip it over. Or, you know, when you're tapping on a screen, it's enough to tip it over. But this thing, the pictures here just show typical kind of nondescript tablets. An iPad Pro is just, I would say it's about an inch taller. So in landscape mode, it's about an inch taller than the tablet you can see on this on the page for the Grimar. And it's one of these things that kind of fold up, and the picture's not quite accurate. It looks like it's got a couple of hinges. The one I bought actually has a big hinge. It's about 4 or 5 inches big. I mean, I've got flimsier hinges on my shed. You know what I mean? So it's quite well built. The only thing that surprised me was in France, which I think is I've pasted the French thing. It cost €9.99, and I had my 10 euro voucher. Apparently in Britain, it costs in excess of £12. I can't quite work out why that should be. Why is it more expensive in Britain?
I have an one-word explanation for you.
Okay, well, yeah. I think we can guess that. It's just,
does it start with a B and end with Rexit?
Yep.
I mean, exactly. You know, 10 euros should be, what, 8 quid?
Yeah, something like that.
Or, you know, 8.50 at most, but, you know, you shouldn't be 12. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as these things go, you know, I get loads of these little things, and they're fine for phones and they're fine for this, but this is the first time I found a stand that was good for an iPad Pro for, you know, take the keyboard off, stick it on, read comics, and read the paper while I'm having coffee during breakfast.
And for cheap. I mean, you can get iPad Pro stands, but they usually expensive and heavy and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I decided I wouldn't buy anything plastic. Mm-hmm. And I find the metal ones, well, they kind of stick to the iPad Pro because of all the magnets. Mm-hmm. And I like the bamboo stuff.
Me too.
Bamboo stuff's quite light, but it's very, very strong, and it doesn't kind of split or crack. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I like this. Good
Me
one.
Too. Me too. I might get one whenever next time I go to IKEA.
A voucher.
Well, if I get a voucher, then I might go even before. But yeah, I'm not. I don't have any trips planned for that. My cool thing is a podcast. I'm trying to add more podcasts from people of color and different walks of life to my my queue. I have plenty of tech podcasts from more or less white people, and I thought it would be good to broaden the scope a little bit. And very helpfully, Castro has a whole section of podcasts from black people and people of color in general. And this one I found, it's called Pod Save the People. The host is, his name is D-Ray McKesson, I think that's how you pronounce that. And he talks about news, culture, social justice, politics, a lot of different topics, with like other people, with guests, and it's so far been super super interesting. I mean, it doesn't sound like crazy interesting, like, but I just picked random podcasts. I was like, well, I'm gonna listen to one episode and see what I like out of that list, and so far I've really enjoyed it. Last episode was about evictions in LA that are supposed to be illegal, but like they're not, like people are still doing them, or climate change impact on pregnancy, for example, which is super interesting and something nobody really thinks about. The topics, as you can see, like very, like sometimes it's social justice, sometimes it's Black Lives Matter, sometimes it's something else, sometimes it's politics. It's definitely not a podcast for someone who is not into politics or not into topics like this. Like, I wouldn't recommend that then. But if you are like me, if you are into this topic and you like want to listen to more, like I said, different voices, highly recommend that podcast. And I mean, the cool thing about podcasts is it's free and you can listen whenever you want. And if you don't like an episode or you don't like the podcast, then you don't. Like, it's nothing, you're not losing anything by listening to it or not listening to it. So, I mean, you might lose out on a really cool podcast, but well, that's your choice. So I can only recommend that. Pod Save the People, also, I think, a really funny title. All right.
Awesome.
That's it for the show today. Thank you so much, guys, for doing this, even with a really small round today. I think we still had a really good show. I have to come up with some show titles later. Jeff, thank you for being here, and let the good people know where they can find you.
Well, as always, this is just so much fun. So I'm glad we do this every week.
Me too.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jay Gamet both places. And the Mac Show earlier in the day, The Big Show Now. I get around and do a lot of other podcasts. I dropped a teaser on the Mac Show earlier that I'm getting ready to launch my own show, because it's been far too long since I've had my own podcast.
Yep.
So soon.
Now that you've been on all podcasts on the internet, you have to create your own. Like, you've run out of shows officially, right?
Right.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. Alistair, where can people...
Oh, you know, 2 weeks after saying I just started a blog, guess how many blog posts I've written?
One?
None. So I just couldn't be bothered, you know, but I'll get around to it. I think what I might do is I might do the latest thing. I was trying to get a story, just a little story together. I know nothing about what's called robot vacuum cleaners. Mm-hmm. And there's a company, I've just put the link in, called Kyvol. And they were saying, you know, we've got a robot vacuum cleaner. It's completely different. And I thought, we look exactly the same as everyone else's. You know, a kind of a disc-shaped thing.
Yeah, that just looks like a Roomba.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but they particularly said, because I wanted to do a blog post on this, but I don't have the full information, but their promo says it recognizes walls and edges, which is pretty good, because I'd recognize walls and edges when I bump into them as well, and hug them. They hug them so that they can get deeper into corners where dust and debris might collect. So obviously I sent a message to the company saying, okay, I want to know more, because... you know, you've got a circular vacuum cleaner that gets into corners. That sounds geometrically impossible. Can we get some information? Anyway, they came back to me and said, we've forwarded your question on to the developers.
Okay.
So when I get an answer, maybe I'll write a blog post about that. Until then, there's no point going to my blog, because there's nothing there apart from the same old story from 2 weeks ago. So just... I'm on Twitter, but I haven't been doing much tweeting either, because apparently if you're on Twitter, you're an evil person. So I thought I'd stay away for a while. But there you go. Next time, I'll tell you where I am.
I'm looking
based on my experience with robot vacuums, I will call it the one standout feature that I'm seeing from scanning their site is the battery life in the robot. Other than that, I'm not seeing anything unique about the product. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I'm just scanning through the homepage that you put into the chat, but 2.5 hour battery life, mm-hmm. continuous use. That's pretty good.
I would say so. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that article about what the developer said about about that.
I think it must have side brushes that peek out or something, but why didn't they just make it square in the first place?
Yeah, exactly. All right. You can find me or like everything I do on my website at thepatrice.com. I also have a really cool podcast that I publish almost every week, or actually every week so far, called Foodie Flashback, where we talk about food and food-related memories. I actually have to talk to Alistair whether he wants to be on as well. We'll talk about that later. So far, I've had like really cool guests from BTN, not from BTN, from the UK, from other countries. I have lined up someone from Italy very soon, just waiting on some time with her. So I'm trying to get different people from different, yeah, different podcasts, different walks of life, different backgrounds, everything, podcasters, not podcasters, tech people, not tech people, like it doesn't matter. I wanna hear their food related stories and their like how they grew up. Like I can definitely recommend the episode I posted the other week with Hawa. That was really, really interesting. Like growing up in Nigeria and sneaking out at night to buy street food. Like not what you would expect at that age, but like that was super interesting. And like how she grew up with all those like really, really crazy dishes. Like, I mean, she had like Nigerian food and American food. And she said there was some Danish food, but she couldn't even remember any. So can't be that good, I guess. But yeah, so it was a really cool episode, and there are a lot of Nigerian recipes if you want them. Like she sent me like a whole list of links. So head over to foodieflashback.com and look for her episode. And it's definitely one worth listening, but so are all the others. Like the one with Jeff was also very, very funny.
I still need to make mayonnaise.
You do. I finally figured out that I'm not allergic to eggs, so I'll try eggs again.
Oh, great. That's good.
I got that checked. You can find this very podcast and all the other podcasts on BritishTechNetwork.com. BritishTechNetwork.com, where we have like the Big Show, the Mac Show, the Photo Show, maybe at some point the Windows Show. We'll see whenever Adley gets around to that. We have the News Show every weekday from Kyle. He produces that every morning for us, every morning UK time. Or it's released every morning. He's actually in the Philippines, which actually works out pretty great. And the only reason why we can do that is because we have your support and if you want to support us, then you can head over to BritishTechNetwork.com. There's a PayPal link, and then just give us like a little money every month, and we will be able to continue doing what we're doing, which is, I think, pretty awesome. Thank you so much for listening, and talk to you next week.